this, a word of explanation about this weird passage that Tom read from Genesis. What's going on? Cutting all these animals up and flames in the night. There was a regular form of covenant making. That is, and the Jews didn't originate this. They would cut up an animal, and when the animal was burnt, they believed that the god or the gods ate half of the animal and the people ate the other half, and they had a common meal, and therefore they were joined together. So that's this very obscure business of all this slaughtered the livestock. Okay, every second Sunday of Lent has the same reading, namely the business of the Transfiguration. And what we have to do is try to figure out what is going on. First of all, it's very likely a retrojection of some kind of post-resurrection experience into Jesus' historic career. But what I think is extraordinarily important and extraordinarily difficult for us to get our heads around is this. They wanted to say that God had raised this man Jesus. But I think the neuralgic point for us is why Jesus died in the first place. Because if you don't understand that, then you don't understand the impulse of the resurrection. And this is, I think, where I think the problem becomes very sharp, at least for me. We don't appreciate the fact that Jesus' death was a political assassination. Jesus died because he was a political danger, menace, misfit, threat to the order of the Roman Empire. And so it's not just poor old dead Jesus, it's poor old dead murdered Jesus. Murdered by the powers of greed and empire that God has vindicated by raising him from the dead. And Luke, unique among the evangelists, has Moses, Elijah, and Jesus talking about his exodus, his leaving this world. And of course, for Jewish ears, the Exodus meant essentially a political event. The liberation of the Jews from the empire of that time, namely the Egyptians. So I think there are multiple problems here, at least for me, and I'm laying them out for you in the hope that you may recognize something of yourself and your own quandary. I mean, for us, death, especially in the West, especially today, is an intensely personal and private affair. I mean, everybody in this room, I suspect, has experienced death, the death of a parent or a relative or a good friend. And death, with its imperiousness and its finality, I mean, it sort of transfixes us, I think, makes us concentrate on this particular dying, of this particular person. But that's not primarily the way that the writers of the New Testament saw the death of Jesus. Paul puts it very clearly. He said, "We preach Christ and him crucified. Scandal to the Jews and foolishness to the Greeks." Scandal just means stumbling block, huh? Why was it a stumbling block to the Jews? Well, they couldn't imagine that the Messiah, their kingly figure, their royal figure, their liberative figure, could have been murdered by the hands of agents of empire. A scandal. And of course, it's foolishness to the Greeks because they live within empire, and anybody who tried to fight City Hall, or in this case the Roman Empire, was mad. So they have, in a sense, politicized, and that's exactly what the event was. They have politicized death. They put death into a quite different context than the kind of privatized, individualized notion that we have of death. Because it's only if we understand Jesus' death over against all the powers in the world afoot right now that are alienating people from each other, oppressing people, violating people, that we can make Christian sense of the resurrection. I mean, and this is kind of implicit in the passage from Genesis, where we have the great promise of God to the Jews that through you, the world will be detribalized. Through you, all the nations of the world are going to be unified. And Paul echoes that in this passage from the Philippians, which is by consent, an authentic Paul line, that our citizenship is in heaven. That goes into your head and you get, oh, that's good, we're going to die, we're all going to go to heaven, and that's the end. No, Paul was making that clearly a counterposition to our citizenship is a membership of the Roman Empire. No, that's not where we belong. We belong into this entirely different order of things. So what's the problem? I mean, I live in North London, Ontario. It's pretty quiet, you know. Big political problem we have are dogs barking or dandelions. It's very hard for me to situate myself in the larger world. A world that is the hallmark of which is oppression and violence and inequity between us human beings. So for me, and I propose for you, Lent is a time to try to reflect on where do I fit into the big picture? Where are my allegiances? Where am I complicit in violence, in oppression of people? It's very hard to do. I find it very hard to do. But until we kind of deprivatize the death of this poor man Jesus, until we grasp the nettle of the fact that he was murdered by the powers of empire, we're really not going to understand his death, and we're not going to understand really the shape of the resurrection, which says that the powers of empire do not have the last word. Violence and oppression in our world are not going to be the final statement about the reality of the human condition. Again, the problem is, I think, with me moving from my very private concern about death, my own mortality, or that of my kids, or my friends, you guys, to this larger framework within which to see my living and my dying, my living and my dying. Because the living and the dying, the way I live and the way I die, are absolutely of the essence of things here. A modest suggestion. If we live in a world in which injustice is far more pervasive than justice, and I think that's beyond dispute, all you have to do is look at the economic inequities in our world, then I think the billfold. Billfold is the place where you can at least begin to get some purchase on this business of the living and the dying of Jesus. And that's, you know, I think that's what Luke had in mind here. You know, as I said before, the Gospel of Luke is unique in that it is written in very classy Greek, written to a bunch of sophisticated people, written to a bunch of wealthy people, therefore literate, who knew the literature of the ancient world, of his world. And yet it is Luke who says, and the followers of Jesus sold everything they had and threw everything in a common pot, and nobody went needy. I'm not ready to do that, but I see what Luke is getting at. I mean, where does this stuff impinge really on my lived life? And I think, although this too is fairly abstract, if we think again about these terrible inequities which mark our world, and somehow contribute in however small a way, yet major way for me, to overcome those inequities or to right those imbalances, then that's a way forward. That's what Luke, I think, is about. That's what he's talking about Jesus' Exodus for, and that's at least can set an agenda for what Lent is supposed to do. We're supposed to be praying more in Lent. And so I find myself, and I propose to you, to try to be praying more, and to be praying with a view to finding out where do I situate myself in the world? Where am I conscious of my complicity, of my indifference to the terrible inequities in our world? Because only if I can do that can I begin to understand what the resurrection is.